time now for America in the Balance. Brought to you by Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. And now your co-hosts, Amanda Teagarden and Don Wyatt.
And welcome, freedom-loving Oklahomans, to another hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with my co-host, Don Wyatt.
Delighted to be here. We had some more interesting weather since our last radio podcast, didn't we?
Wind,
some storms. Woo.
Rain,
trees
everywhere.
Trees down, roofs busted open.
Yeah. All kinds of things. It's normal. This is Oklahoma.
Welcome to Oklahoma.
We are broadcasting from Oklahoma. We're both with OK Safe. That's OK-SAFE, Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. I kind of remember those concepts. And our other website is exposinghealthcarereform.com, which is about exposing the truth or realities of what healthcare reform is bringing us.
Right.
Not only universal healthcare and increased premiums and a diminished healthcare system, where it's a huge technological system that will favor certain entities. That information is on exposinghealthcarereform.com. We have another website that's still in the process of being developed, which is called StopSmartMetersInOklahoma.org. And, you know, more and more people are coming to realize the health, the negative health effects of the smart meters and the smart grid and the mesh and the exposure to the EMF.
Finally generating some pushback.
There are. People are filing lawsuits, and it's starting to get some attention. Right. And, Don, you've got some websites.
I'm involved in the Tulsa 912 Project. We have a website simply called the Tulsa912Project.com. That's Tulsa912Project.com. And one of the spinoffs from that that I've been involved with is a blog-based website called Boondoggleblog.com. The purpose of Boondoggle is simply to publicize various kinds of improper use of our public monies.
Lots of
waste,
fertile field.
waste, fraud, duplication. And
waste, fraud, and abuse.
There you go.
I was hearing about that today on a conference call, waste, fraud, and abuse. And we are talking about government. Don, you've got the Tulsa 912 is hosting a education forum on the Common Core curriculum standards. Is that up on the website?
It is. You can actually sign up for it there. There's a nominal fee for tickets. I think it's $10, maybe another buck for fees or something. But it's going to be a really educational forum. We're going to have State Education Superintendent Janet Barisi there to speak for quite some time and answer questions. We have some others that are less supportive of Common Core.
That would be the opposition.
There you go, the opposition. So I think it's going to be a really good program. The information is on the website about it. And if you're able to come, it would really be money and time well spent.
It's August 10th.
August the 10th, Saturday.
Saturday, August 10th, 2013 at Spirit Life Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Correct.
And you can go to Tulsa912Project.com for the details. And Dr. Everett Piper of Oklahoma Wesleyan University is one of the speakers.
He is one of the speakers and panelists, as is Jenny White from ROPE and some other very... well, we actually went down this weekend and filmed an interview with David Barton, which is on Common Core, so that we can play that interview at the Understanding Symposium as well. It's called Understanding Common Core.
There's growing opposition to Common Core state standards, and I'm very glad that you're doing that. So save the date, August 10th, 2013, at Spirit Life Church, a public forum on Common Core curriculum standards, what's wrong with it, and let's hear those who are for it, what their explanation is.
Right, exactly.
All right. We are frequently discussing the implementation of the Patient Protection and Unaffordable Care Act, known as, that's our name for
that's
it.
That's our name for it.
The Unaffordable Care Act, passed in 2010. The public knows it as Obamacare. We know that it was written well before he was elected. to whatever position whoever he is. But
it was in the third desk drawer of some progressive politician for a lot of years.
A lot of desk drawers.
Like.
But it was written by those who are going to benefit from it. A lot of IT companies were part of the working groups.
Right.
The research universities, the insurance companies, big time the insurance companies.
Yep.
So it didn't just come to fruition in 2008. That
Not
idea was
all.
Percolating for many, many years.
Right.
And it was just his administration that was able to get it passed.
Yeah, that Unaffordable Care Act was one of our recent guests. And if you haven't listened to that interview that we did with the Surgery Center founder, go listen to it.
That's Dr. Keith Smith.
Yes,
that was a great
interview as well.
So that was also in July, so go back to our archives and you can listen to that interview when he kind of blows the lid off on what the real cost, why healthcare costs so much in America.
Exactly.
Well, continuing that theme, we're going to be talking about insurance and health insurance and the employer mandate and other things that are coming headlong toward us. And our guest today, which I'm just delighted that he's taken time out, he's a very busy man, is Mark Croucher, who is the owner-operator. He's an independent insurance agent in the state of Oklahoma. He's been in the insurance industry since 1997. Mark Croucher was also a candidate when I first met him, when he was running for insurance commissioner
right.
in 2010 against John Doak. John Doak eventually won.
Right.
And then he also ran for state senate in Senate District 37 in 2012.
Correct.
Family man, wife Ginger, wonderful lady. And they've got five children. And
very tall.
Very tall. Very tall children. And one of them's getting married pretty soon. So it's many blessings here. And he's been fighting some health issues very valiantly, which we really admire. His attitude is born again Christian. He lives his faith. He walks his faith.
He's been a great friend to the activists that are trying to restore some reasonable form of government here too. And he's really been a big help on a lot of issues.
I would agree with you, Don. He's just a wonderful example of what it means to be actively engaged. And he fully understands the insurance mandate and the insurance world. And he does try to do the best that he can to help his customers. His company is called Why Insurance.
W-H-Y.
W-H-Y. Guess what that stands for?
We help you.
We help you, and they really do that. So, Mark, are you there?
I'm here.
All right. Well, we're very delighted that you're here. We know that you're busy, and you've got a customer there, so you're going to be in and out maybe on that. Did we leave anything out on the bio?
Oh, sounds great. Heck, got me all excited about myself.
Well, we're all excited. And also, you started the Christmas parade.
That's right.
In Tulsa. Well, Tulsa Christmas
parade. I've had a lot of help.
With a lot of help.
A lot of help, and it's for the people of Tulsa.
Well, there's a long story behind that, which we'll save for another interview. But let's get to the issue of health care and insurance. Since the passage of the Unaffordable Care Act in 2010, can you give us an update on the state of private health insurance options and what's available for people today?
It has changed in the last 3 years. I had a shelf in here where we had 30-some different insurance companies that for individual health insurance we could write in Oklahoma. I think there's five companies left on that shelf right now. And dust is getting pretty thick on two or three of them. Even though they still technically you can write here, their products are not what you want to call inviting.
What happened to these companies? We went from 30 companies offering insurance down to about five or four?
Right. They couldn't keep up with the mandates, what's required by the insurance carriers if they want to play ball. A lot of them pulled the plug, in June 2010, said, we're done. We're not going to take anything past, July 1.
Did the companies fold or did they just quit?
Oh, no, they're still operating. And
okay.
People that have the insurance still have insurance with those carriers.
So they're just not writing new policies?
But they do not want any new business. They cannot, anything that's not grandfathered, a lot of them don't want to mess with.
Got it.
There's a handful of companies left. United Healthcare's left. Humana's left. Aetna's left. Assurance left. Blue Cross, Coventry. That's pretty much it.
Can you say those again? Who's left is United Healthcare, Humana?
United Healthcare, Humana.
Mm-hmm.
In Oklahoma, United Healthcare, Humana.
Aetna.
Aetna. Blue Cross Blue Shield, Assurant, and Coventry. And I believe that's all that's left.
Well,
full-blown major medical health plans.
We're just so delighted that the free market is alive and well in Oklahoma for the insurance industry.
You betcha. You know, all you got to do is, you know, mandate them to death, and that's, you know, that's basically what they've done.
It's the way they put a lot of other things out of business, isn't it?
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, you either picking the winners, call it what you want.
Yep.
You know, and you know, there's lots of things that one of the things that really troubled me. I was at a meeting for one of the carriers. I won't mention the carrier's name, but one of the things that they were kind of bragging about. It's not my favorite carrier, by the way, but it's a very popular carrier. But they were talking about that as this exchange works out, as people buy in the exchange, the companies are only going to be allowed to make, and it's like 2%. 2% or 3% profit is what they can make. And anything over that that they make as a profit goes back into a pool to pay other companies that didn't make that profit. So the bottom line, you know, we're taking from one to give to another. So they're actually, leveling the playing field amongst themselves and guarantee that everybody gets profit. Now, I don't know how much, you know, no one could give me an answer as to, you know, are y'all planning a lot of, you know, inside your corporate realm, are y'all planning a lot of bonuses or big incentives, you know, to suck up a lot of money? Because to me, that would certainly be an inducement to do so.
Exactly. It invites the kind of funny bookkeeping that happens in the entertainment industry, doesn't it?
Exactly. But we will wait and see.
Now, the state of Oklahoma three times has rejected to the establishment of a state-based insurance exchange. So when you're talking in an exchange, as this thing gets set up, which one are you talking about, a federal exchange in the state of Oklahoma?
It will be a federal exchange in Oklahoma. And don't kid yourself, any exchange is going to be a federal exchange.
I know that.
you know that, but just, you know, for the general public, and I think you've got a pretty educated listener. But it'll be a federally run exchange here in Oklahoma.
Do you think it's going to be through the... My thought is that it's through the Oklahoma Healthcare Authority.
That's where I assume it'll be. I don't know. And no way of really knowing until it does happen. But we'll... I would assume that's probably where it's going to end up.
So what do you tell customers?
I tell them... that come October 1st, we're going to sit down and figure out what we can do for you. And basically, this is what I tell them, Amanda. You know, I spent 2.5 years and about killed myself trying to educate people across this state what's going to happen when the Affordable Care Act hits. You know, because it's not about health care. You know that. I know that. And I know a lot of your listeners do. But a lot of the things that's in there, a lot of the controls, and a lot of the pitfalls that are coming, you know, finally about a year ago, 6 months ago, I figured out we're not going to stop it. It's going to happen. And now all we can do is sit back and wait for the wreck. And once the plane crash hits, try to survive as many as we can and guide and direct people through the turmoil as best we can do. You know, we're actually working on building a private exchange, if you want to call it that, somewhere where every plan in Oklahoma will be listed in one spot that'll meet all the requirements of the government exchange so that we can help customers get there. And come October 1, when the gun sounds and it's time to start enrolling people, the mandate goes into effect, then we'll do what we can do with what we've got to work with.
All those companies that you said, the 30 down to the 6th, are those 30 still authorized to sell plans in Oklahoma? Is that what you said?
They won't. They're done. They won't write anymore because they cannot write new. The plans that they have on the books do not meet up with the necessary criteria.
They don't have a basic health plan per...
They don't meet everything necessary either, you know, to be considered a valid plan.
So explain to me what insurance companies are going to be available on your alternative exchange. Just these same six?
Same companies, that's it, yeah. I mean, that's all it's going to be that are right. And they'll be off exchange. We've been told, five of those six companies have told me that they're going to be off exchange. None of them really know exactly what they're going to have on the exchange, if they will have anything on the exchange. Somebody will be there. Blue Cross will be on there. I know that. They've said, yeah, they're going to be there. The rest of them are still kind of vacillating around, afraid to make a commitment. You know, it's kind of like a bunch of kids. They don't want to pick, you know, decide what team they want to be on, you know, on the playground, because they don't want to pick the wrong one, so they're just kind of dancing around waiting to see what happens, you know.
Do these people offer insurance plans to people who do not want to go through an exchange?
Yes, they do right now. And I believe they will still offer one in October. They won't go through the federal exchange, let's put it to you that way. Because as long as the plan meets certain criteria, it's a valid plan. You know, just like the deal with the mandate on the, or the employment mandate, that was pretty slick. I kind of wondered how they would pull that off, but you got to look at the number of people in America that are employed by groups of over 100, and there's a lot of people who are employed there. And if they can push those people a year down the road from getting all upset, you know, you're going to have smaller chunks of people getting affected at a time. And that's been the way this administration has operated with all this stuff. You know, let's upset the apple cart on 15 or 20% of the people at a time. That way it's manageable and we can deal with it. And in this case, that's what they're going to be doing again. They'll push the bulk down the road, deal with the self-employed people and the people that work for small groups. You know, those are the people that's going to get the biggest shock, are the people in small groups, because a lot of them are going to be advised not to continue with the small group because of their liability or their exposure to taxes and penalties. So a lot of small business owners, maybe 10 or 12 employees, 15 employees that had a group plan, will probably just tell everybody to go to the exchange and get their own insurance.
For our listeners who do not know, would you just describe what an exchange is? It's basically a website that you go to, put in some data, and it helps you pick a plan.
Help pick a plan. That's what the exchange is. You know, and the difference will be on the federal exchange, if you qualify for a subsidy, you know, that'll all be calculated in there. If you do not buy from the federal exchange and you're entitled to a subsidy, you don't get the subsidy.
Now, I want to clarify, it is not the applicant who gets the subsidy. The insurance company gets the subsidy.
Right. But what it does, it comes off the cost of the, cost of the plan.
Right.
Let's say the plan was $1,000 and the subsidy was going to be 20%. They'd get a $200 subsidy. The employee or the customer would pay $800, and the insurance or the federal government would send a check for $200 to the insurance company.
Right.
So the insurance company does not get the premium. They still get their premium.
But just from two places, went part of it from you, the customer, and then
Correct.
Part of it from the federal government.
Correct.
That's the thing where people are saying, well, you qualify for a subsidy. Well, no, it isn't. It's a discount that's getting paid to the insurance company. So the insurance company's not out anything.
Right.
And they're guaranteed to cover more people because people are being mandated under this. Now,
what's the penalty for a company to not provide coverage if it were required? It's only a couple grand a year per employee over 30 or some number like that.
Well, that's, you know, you get, they're kind of confusing in there. If the employer doesn't have over 100 employees and he doesn't do it, then he's not at it. There is no penalty.
Right.
The problem comes into play. Let's say he's got 100 employees, he's got 90 employees, and he offers a health plan. The first 30 are exempt. But let's say of the other 60 people, quote-unquote, or of the 90 people that are on the plan, one of those people decides that they do not want to be on the group health plan. Instead, they want to go to the exchange because, for some reason, in their situation, they're going to get a big subsidy or something. So they don't take the group plan, and they go to the exchange. If they go to the federal exchange, then the employer is out $3,000 per employee per year penalty for every employee over 30 that they have. Not the ones that are not on the plan, but every employee that's on the group plan. So there'd be a 60 times 3,000 would be $180,000 penalty
that
the dead employee would pay.
Holy
cow.
So
that's why there are small groups are going to walk away from this and say, we're not going to offer insurance.
Right.
Do you know
now, over that, yes. Employers over 100, you know, if they want to not offer insurance, they pay a penalty, and I don't remember, but I think it's $3,000 a year as well that they would pay to.
Now, when I was running my business, I paid 100% of the premiums for all of the people on my staff, and there were several of the people that we insured where our out-of-pocket cost was $1,500 a month. So for me to exchange that for a $3,000 charge would have been happy all the way to the bank because...
Well, I was going to say, from a fiscal point of view,
right?
You know, it's a no-brainer.
Exactly.
You know?
And they
stockholders are going to look at this and say, hey, take the penalty.
Exactly. Now, it's true that by deferring the enforcement, those companies, the employers who might otherwise be faced with a penalty, if they choose to pay it, I guess they could, but there won't be any enforcement to force it. Is that what you understand?
Say that again, Don.
Let's say an employer is going to make himself subject to the penalty, but by pushing that enforcement off until 2015, they're not going to force him to pay it during 2014.
Yeah, there's not going to be there to do it.
Right.
So he could kick the can down the road, right?
He kicks it down there a year later, and then they look at it a year down the road. But like right. I said, that's 20%, 30%. You know, that's probably 50% of the people in America that's going to not be affected.
Right.
Just listening to your explanation of how the penalties are calculated in the number of employees minus another number of employees, right. You just have to wonder about the minds of the people who actually created this thing.
If you're not being on the political arena anymore, I can say this. What Nimrod thought up this thing?
That's exactly right.
Nimrod is right.
And worse yet, what type of idiots elected him to it?
What kind of a mind do you have to think of this convoluted way to calculate things? I mean, it should be very straightforward.
If you tell them the truth, it's real plain and simple. If you're trying to hide a lie, let's make it real detailed and real confusing.
So you have to hire somebody to explain it to you.
Well, yeah, they've done that consistently throughout the tax code, but this is another good example where they've dumbed down the population in math so that if they give them at least four factors that have numbers associated with them, they know that the typical person will have his eyes glazed over and drop out of mental interaction.
Well, here's one of the things that makes me laugh. You know, deal I was reading today. The Affordable Care Act creating thousands of jobs to explain the law to the public. Now, in the torrent of speculation about the impact of the Obamacare on the economy, one thing seems clear. The law is spurring a raft of new jobs in call centers, IT companies, and community organizations. Anybody know anybody that's got those skills? You know, community organizer? What do you do with that?
Acorn.
Muhammad.
Designed to help Americans understand the complex health law and navigate the new insurance marketplace.
Hassan.
Approximately
in India.
7,000 to 9,000 new jobs. You know, now, think about that for a minute. We got 50 states. You got 9,000 jobs divided by 50. That's 180 jobs in a state. Now, in the state of Oklahoma, where you got 77 counties, created 2.3 jobs per county. Man, are we good.
Well, you know what, though? Is this going to be offset by how many employers reduce their workforce, either from full-time to part-time, or start eliminating people right now?
I guarantee you, we're going to lose more than 2.3 jobs per county.
You bet.
For a service industry job, for a call center job, and I was kind of kidding around, but actually these call center jobs could be anywhere. Somebody could be, it literally could be Hassan in Hyderabad, India, is walking you through this.
That's right.
Or, all I know is I got 17 years experience in this, and I kill myself to try to read and stay abreast of everything going on, and stay informed on it and be able to make knowledgeable decisions for my clients. And we're going to have 7,000 to 9,000 people. We're going to watch a video, you know, give them 90 minutes and let them read a computer screen. Now, that's who I want to help me get my insurance.
Well, I tell you this because we're moving toward the standardization of everything. So here you have choices A, B, C, or D. That's it. It covers this A, B, C, or D. These are your coverage options. Your options are reduced, minimized, standardized, and reduced to just little fill-in-the-blank things. Those would be your options. It's not at all a custom plan. Mm. And it's not customer service, and it's certainly not like it, like anything Americans would want or expect. We're going to universal health care. Mark, that's the music indicating we're coming to the break. Don and I were going to tell you that the music you're about to listen to is a song, After Midnight, right, by J.J. Cale.
Enjoy, and we'll talk about it when we come back.
All right. Thank you.
After midnight, we're gonna let it all hang out. After midnight, we're gonna chill and shine. We're gonna cause talk and suspicion, give an exhibition, find out what it is all about. After midnight, we're gonna let it all hang out. After midnight, gonna shake your tambourine. After midnight, it's gonna be peaches and cream. We're gonna cause talk and suspicion, give an exhibition, find out what it is a holy bell. After midnight, we gonna let it all hang. Talking suspicion, give an exhibition, find out what it is on labor. After midnight, we're gonna let it all hang out. After midnight, we're gonna let it all hang out.
And welcome back to the second half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with Don White. We're just grooving along to J.J. Cale.
Good sound.
That was After Midnight. And as most of our listeners know, J.J. Cale passed away on Friday, July 26, after suffering a heart attack. He was 74 years old.
74. One of the lesser known but very influential kings in rock and roll.
He was well known as part of the Tulsa Sound,
right,
along with a lot of other folks in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. We were talking before we started the show tonight, how many good names and a lot of people in the music industry start out in Oklahoma.
Here, yeah.
And it goes on to say, Cale was cited as an influence by some of rock and roll's biggest names, and some of his songs went on to become enormous hits performed by the likes of Eric Clapton and Leonard Skinner.
Yeah, that particular song was Eric Clapton's. He went to, I think, number 18 or something on Billboard chart with it in 1970. There's a great story here. It says, this is, I'm reading from Song Facts. It says, the Oklahoma songwriter and guitarist J.J. Cale wrote this, meaning this After Midnight song, released it as a demo. The first time Cale heard Clapton's version was when he heard it on his car radio. He didn't even know in advance that it was going to be covered. Clapton later recorded other Cale songs, and he was Cale was telling Mojo magazine that he says, I was dirt poor, not making enough to eat, and I wasn't a young man. I was in my 30s, so I was very happy. It was nice to make some money. So that'd be kind of funny to write a song and then suddenly hear it covered by a big artist on your radio.
Well, at least they gave him credit, too, who wrote the song. But anyway, so that's a sad thing. And I was telling my husband when we were picking the music for this, and he said, yeah, that's a better one than this other famous one, which is Cocaine.
Cocaine. And I'll Make Love to You Anytime.
Although he's had a lot of good songs. And yeah, in fact, if we went through the whole list of his titles, our listeners would probably recognize 100% of them.
Our tribute to J.J. Cale.
We already covered on the employer mandate on the insurance. I just want to make it clear that employer mandate has been postponed for a year just for large employers. Is that also for small businesses?
Yeah, the penalty that they're taking is the large. The way I understand it, it's the large employer.
Well,
that's the one they're going to set to the side.
It says, now this is from CBS Evening News on July 2nd. It said, Wyatt Andrews noted that the move comes after months of complaints and backlash. He added that with the extra time, the administration is, quote, promising to reduce, unquote, the burdens of the employer mandate on smaller companies and to ensure that they do not follow through on threats of layoff or reduced hours. According to Andrews, quote, workers will still be allowed to buy their own insurance on a state exchange. The only thing that changes here is that their employers won't be penalized next year if they do. So that, to me, that implies it's small employers as well. I haven't seen
That would be a good thing if they got a break.
Well, it's a freaky.
But like I said, it's one of these deals. Until it starts affecting everybody's pocketbook, we're not going to see results, I'm afraid.
Well, that wasn't Health and Human Services that made that announcement. It was a Treasury Department. And so this
Correct.
Is coming
well,
from...
Well, who do you think collects?
That's the IRS enforcement.
Which is why we're opposed to Senate Bill 254.
Which is an action item.
Which is an action item. We'll be talking about that bill at the end of the hour. The next thing we want to talk about, maybe, Don, you want to introduce this question?
Let's introduce this one. The process of managing this avalanche of applications has got to be kind of amazing to think about. And so we would like to have you help us talk a little bit about the following. Recently, the Obama administration announced that they had awarded a contract worth as much as $1.2 billion to a British company named Serco to, quote, help them sift applications for health insurance and tax credits under the new health care law, close quote. Just as a full disclosure, I used to do a lot of work with Lockheed Martin, and Serco and Lockheed Martin are in close alliance because Serco has done an awful lot of defense contracting, and in fact, Serco is in charge of the atomic weapons operations for the U.K., so it's a U.K. company with an American presence near Washington, D.C. in a place called Reston, which is right by Herndon, Virginia, or we used to call it Reston. We think that may be where the seat of government really is out there in Herndon. But that's a subject for a different show. Anyway, we wanted to talk a little bit about the implications of a defense contractor stepping into this role of healthcare for apparently the very first time. Do you know anything about those guys or how they're going to operate?
I don't. I just know pretty much what you've got there. It stuck in my crawl that we went and got a European company to do it rather than an American company. I don't care if they're better over there or not.
Well, it's kind of both. If you look at the history of Serco, by the way, is S-E-R-C-O, SERCO.com is the main website, and then they have Serco North America, which is Serco-NA.com. Serco-NA.com. We have an interesting background dating already back to the late 1890s, right. 19th century, and the 21st century with the advent of radio technology.
Right.
And then moving over to England. So Serco was started in England in 1929, but started in North America before that. But I think, now, don't you see the connection between an atomic weapons establishment management system and healthcare?
Well, sure. That's like sense. You know, the auto mechanics, you know, they work on your teeth.
There you go. What could go wrong? I like that. That's a good.
Well, auto mechanics can buff the side of your car, so it's practical to think.
Well, anyway. I guess if you misbehave or don't fit their statistics, they have solutions.
Too many people? Yeah. Push a button.
Exactly.
We did look up Serco. We're just kind of kidding around. We did look them up, and they are a what I would call a conglomerate.
Yep.
And they have hands in a lot of different things, including prison management.
They manage air traffic control towers in 11 states. They do a couple of stuff. They manage visa applications, so you'd think maybe that's kind of similar or remotely similar, but
I'm sure they, you know, have other things they do besides defense contracting. But
sure.
They do consulting, obviously. Defense. By the way, in Britain, defense is DEFENCE.
That's right. They still like spell defense. Things wrong.
And education, environmental services, facilities management, health, home affairs, ICT, which is information communication technologies, leisure.
They sound like a very green company.
Local government, nuclear, science, atomic weapons establishment, transport, and welfare services. Now, see, when you standardize every process, it's easy to have your hand in all of these pies. And then North America, Serco North America, is engaged in government services, and it's bringing service to life. This is Serco North America. And our passion, it says, we help to ensure the integrity of satellite data for our armed forces. So not only will they be looking up for the armed forces, they're also going to be sifting through our health applications.
And connected to IRS because they have to determine whether or not subsidies are eligible.
It's just, you know.
Yikes.
The other thing, what is it? Oh, yeah, they're not doing all of this very well. There's a lot of controversy with this company with their prison management in Australia. So if you want to look up Serco and then come down to the controversies, not on their website, but on other websites, that there have been issues of abuse, believe it or not, in some of the prisons in Australia and poor treatment of prisoners. And, I mean, it's quite an expansive conglomerate that the Obama administration, I haven't quite figured out by reading this who it was. It could be Health and Human Services is the one that awarded this contract, $1.2 billion, but it would be very interesting to get a copy of the contract and yep. see what the conditions are.
I think we should make that a goal. We should try to accomplish that.
But anyway, their goal is to help with the exchanges. It says Serco will help the Obama administration and states to determine who is eligible for insurance subsidies in the form of tax credits and who might qualify for Medicaid. Tasks include intake, routing, review, and troubleshooting of applications according to the contract. So maybe that's some of the 7,000 to 9,000 jobs that you were talking about earlier in processing here. It's going to be subcontractors for Serco.
Well, it could be. A lot of it, like I said, will be in their, you know, I think to answer a lot of questions for people and get them enrolled, that, you know, the rumor on the street, of course, is it'll be a big, you know, campaign, advertising campaign to enroll today with a lot of 800 call-in. Everybody's got to this type of thing.
There is a website. Or the federal exchange already.
Right. There is that. I mean, there is that already, but, I mean, they'll start promoting it and pushing it. And I assume that's where these people will be manning the phone, reading the screen.
J.J. Cale's song After Midnight was used for a Michelob advertising campaign after it got popular. Maybe they'll use that for this campaign.
They might. You know, or
After Midnight on October 1st.
Or Send in the Clown, something like that. You know.
There you go. I like that.
That's a good choice.
The hell. One of the other, you know, interesting things that I'm just kind of sitting back and been reading some stuff. And one is, you know, the Congress is rattling the, you know, the or the House is saying, well, we're going to defund it. We're not going to fund it. We're just going to defund it. Well, we got Senator Colburn speaking out against saying, don't, you know, if you don't defund it, we'll just get, if you try to defund it, we'll shut the government down. We'll get blamed for it. And I'm like, well, you know, you're going to get blamed for implementing it, so figure out what you want to get blamed for.
Yeah, well said.
But I'd really feel better about my senator if he would, you know, stand up there and keep screaming that we're going to, you know, keep fighting it.
Well, there is definitely a split in the ranks of the Republican leadership on what to do about this. There are some who believe we should hold back no punches whatsoever in continuing to try to fight it and to defund it if that's the only route we have available. But there are a lot that are arguing against that. And basically, as I heard on the talk radio today, using capitulation as their strategy. So I don't know.
We are 63 days.
That's right.
From implementation. And I still have no clue, you know, what I'm going to be able to market, what I'm going to be able to offer, and how it's going to work, you know. 63 days away, and I got nothing.
I think that's a pretty good indication that the federal government doesn't either, and our position at OKSafe always was, do not build an insurance exchange, because if you don't, the feds can't, because somebody had to create it first.
Right.
And if the states didn't, the feds would have a very difficult time. Why? Because it's never been done before. It takes a lot of data connections in order to make this work. And the magic triangle for an insurance exchange is a system that connects the patient, the provider, and the payer into one system, which is why we were objecting to the insurance exchange.
Right. And one of the things from my own personal health issues, you know, this song and dance that they give you about electronic medical records, being able to get everything so it's accessible for all the doctors and all the hospitals, that is the biggest bunch of hooey I've ever heard in my life.
Doesn't work out that way, does it?
I have personally experienced it, you know, and why don't you just find me, you know, another lie, because, you know, these guys are tracking down the information constantly, and I make darn sure to remind every one of them, well, you're on the electronic medical records systems. Shouldn't you be able to pull that up?
Right.
And they long pause.
And they say,
you know, but they said, yeah, well, don't worry about it. I said, well, you know what? I don't know what we're paying for then.
I'll tell you what they're paying for. They're paying for all those software programs. Now,
my dad,
I know you've had some very serious health issues and had an occasion to experience firsthand this healthcare system. My dad recently had open heart surgery to replace an aortic valve, and thank the Lord he is recovering nicely. So we went into the doctor's office for his follow-up visit, and he's sitting in there on the table, and next to him is the computer monitor that's projecting from the wall, and the nurse comes in. She faces the computer monitor, not the patient, and, you know, kind of looks at him, the kind of, you know, they're parallel. They're trying to get better about this, actually looking at the patient. But mostly, I started to count the clicks. If she's asking just a series of simple questions, I quit counting at 100 clicks.
When I go into
the heart, we're talking screen pages and screen pages. She has to click in advance, click in advance. Literally, I quit counting at 100 just to ask some simple questions and put in data.
When I go to the heart doctor, they send two people in to see me, one to talk to me and another to type. And the person that types generates at least a full page of material that they print out for me before I leave. It's unbelievable.
All of which could have been on a paper chart.
Oh, yeah.
Real quick, make a few checks.
Yeah.
And it's a hard copy. They make a copy, and there it is.
Yeah.
A tremendous improvement, isn't it?
No, it isn't, because I think it has dehumanized the healthcare system. Yeah. Same thing, and I'll name the hospital. My dad went to St. Francis Hospital. We had to go a couple of times last year to the emergency room. Everybody's behind a monitor.
That's right.
Everybody in the emergency room was behind a computer monitor.
That's right.
Busy. That's it. I mean, there's science. Yeah, you in a monitor.
That's it.
And the patient is in pain on a table.
Yeah.
And, well, anyway.
It's going to get worse before it gets better.
That it will.
Yeah.
Well, give us an update on what else is going on.
That's really about it. I mean, it's hurry up and wait. You know, Medicare season's rapidly approaching. We're doing our certifications for that.
Right.
To be able to offer, you know, Medicare Advantage plans and so forth. They're out. They'll be knowledgeable to what they're going to be and where they're going to be and what the premiums will be soon.
What do you mean by Medicaid season? Is this
Medicare?
Medicare
Advantage. Open enrollment for the Medicare Advantage program.
There's a time window on that, isn't there, Mark?
October the 15th
To December 7th.
To December 7th.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that'll be when people can change their drug plans or change their Medicare Advantage plans if they so choose. And that's kind of that's rapidly approaching, which I find interesting that, and which we've talked before, everything to do with the Medicare Advantage plans, Part D Medicare, you know, that was a trial run for the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
You know, to nationalize everybody. And they even, you know, they're so original, they picked the same dates. We're starting to enroll October 1st, and the first year we go till, you know, March 31, then they'll cut it back down to the 1st of October to the 5th, to the 7th of December, like everything else.
Right.
I'm not on Medicare because I'm not as old as Don. I'm kidding.
Not nearly as old as me.
Don't throw anything.
I'm older than dirt.
You're not either. I'm just kidding. Part D, Medicare, could you explain that? And now this is what you were, this Roundem Up.
Part D Medicare is a the drug plan, and it's a public-private program. Don't kid yourself. The federal government's got their foot in it. The Center of Medicare Medicaid Services is the gatekeeper, and you are required to buy a drug plan of credible coverage, and there are several drug plans out there to choose from. You buy the plan, or you pay a 1% benchmark penalty that figures out the per month for life. If you opt to not have it and you go a year without it, you're going to have a 12% penalty. You go 3 years, you got a 36% penalty, and you pay that penalty for life.
If you don't buy a drug plan, if you don't enroll in a drug plan?
That's correct.
Does everybody have to sign up for Medicare?
Well, Medicare is an automatic. You don't sign up for Medicare. It just happens.
That's exactly
Plan
right.
Plan A happens. Part B is optional.
You get no choice or options.
Yeah. Plan A, when you turn 65, Medicare is your new primary.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, here it is. Boom. And then if you don't want Part B, you let them know. You opt out of Part B or it comes automatically as well.
Well, what's Part B and then Part D?
Part B is your doctor's. For simplification, Part A is hospitalization. Everything goes on inside the hospital walls.
Right.
Part B is what the doctor does. Lab work, x-rays, testing, MRIs, EKGs, CAT scans, doctor visits, flu shots, that type of thing. Part D is the drugs, plain and simple, the drugs, your prescriptions. And you have
to sign up for a drug plan.
Yes. If you don't sign up for a drug plan, then you pay a penalty. It's 1% per month for life.
That's why Mark says this was a trial run, because a lot of the same concepts and philosophies applied to this, didn't they?
Yes, exactly. You know what? And open enrollments, get in for this little window of opportunity. You're stuck. You know, and you pick your plan, you're stuck with it for the year, and you know, do it again.
So
by shortening the time window down, this is the one thing people don't understand. You shorten your window of opportunity after this year. You shorten it down to October the 1st to December the 7th. Everybody's got to enroll in that little bitty window of time. that it's not going to be possible to actually be able to meet with somebody, everybody that's going to want to be met with. It's just not going to happen. So you're going to be left to make your own mind up, pick something at random, look online, hit a button, and call it good.
Or ask
and, of course, that's what they want.
Or ask your best buddy what he did or somebody else what they did. You're right. The idea of having a professional expertise to help you get the best bang for your buck is just gone, isn't it?
It's gone. I mean, it's not going to be there. We help all we can, but you're not going to help everybody.
When did this Part D thing come into existence? Was that under
January 1, 2006. It's actually George Bush's babies.
That's
when it
what
started.
I was going to ask. This is George W. Bush did this. So the trial run for
this
Obama.
This goes back to the Clinton and Bush years. This has nothing to do with Obama.
No, in 2006. And that's when we did the Medicaid expansion project in Oklahoma, I believe.
Yes, it was. It's all amazing how that all works out.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things. Watch your state government. One of the things that's worrying me to death right now. They keep rumors of having a special session to deal with tort reform.
That's right.
Well, you know, I don't care what reason they go back in for. If they're all sitting in there and somebody walks in and says, hey, let's do something with the health exchange. Okay, everybody raise your hand, we go home.
Are they allowed to bring up a subject other than the subject matter of the special session while they're
in
session?
I don't know. I don't have any clue. I don't know why they couldn't.
Okay.
You know, why not call a special session another session while you're there?
Well, I guess that's possible.
I think it's under the ubiquitous term and other business.
Okay.
So I don't think they're necessarily limited to what they announce. It could be and other business. How many people are turning 65 that you're going to, as an estimate, and then how many are already 65 and enrolled in this? So how many
10,000 a day.
10,000 a day. Okay. 10,000 a day.
It's the largest sector of the population. In Oklahoma, we got approximately 10,000 this year. But it's the largest sector in America.
The baby boomers.
Mm-hmm.
The baby boomers.
Yep.
Well, we were all born at the right time, I guess.
There you go.
We're just special. So George Bush brought us Medicare Part D, the expansion of government, and then we got Obama for the stimulus. Oh, the stimulus was under George Bush too,
right?
And then under Obama we got the Unaffordable Care Act. So it's just a continuation from administration to administration of the implementation of this healthcare reform system. This monolith, this huge boondoggle that it is. As we move toward universal health care. The only way to have universal health care is if everybody has an electronic health records, there's an established network for information sharing, and there's an insurance exchange to regulate the insurance industry and the payouts.
If you still have an insurance company.
Am I
correct, Mark, that as other countries like the UK and Canada migrated into the world of universal health care, the insurance companies went away?
Well, I've heard they've got down to where there's like two or three, and they're pretty much just government contracted. Mm-hmm. Now the life insurance company still exists, and in fact, a lot of the life insurance companies supposedly do exceedingly well, in foreign countries.
Interesting.
But I guess it's good people figure, well, our insurance is crap, so we're going to die. Why don't you get some health insurance from maybe somebody farther down my lineage can go to the United States and get something done.
You'd think that would hurt their mortality tables when the universal health care goes into effect, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would think. But
well, you don't want England's health care. They've got the Liverpool Protocol.
I know is, from what I understand there, is you can purchase, if you're like in the government or something or a certain class, there is another special. Your insurance is different than the guy on the street. Fact or fiction, because I don't live there, but I've been told that.
In that show we did a couple weeks ago that we've already mentioned, we learned that a lot of the patients down at the surgery center are coming down here from Canada.
Yes, they do.
All right, we've got 2 minutes to the bottom of the hour, and we are going to all have to put our heads together and come up with an alternative system, not only for insurance, where we self-insure, but also to get our health in line so we don't need the medical system at all, and figuring out alternative ways to get health care, health treatment, pay for it ourselves, and just not swim in this cesspool that's called universal health care and health care reform, and still try to survive what's coming to the best of our ability. It does start with us as an individual, and I hate to say it, but you do have to get healthy. So you don't need to engage in this system. Try not to make insurance claims, just like Dr. Smith was saying. Right. Carry a high premium, high deductible on your insurance premium to the best of your ability, which means you'll have to save the money to have that catastrophic amount available in case something does happen.
Put off the big screen TVs. We got a couple of action items we want to make sure we get to before the end of the hour.
There you go.
There is still a bill that we need to be worried about in Oklahoma, and that's Senate Bill 254. And what we'd like for you to do is to be sure and contact your legislators and urge them to vote no on Senate Bill 254. This bill authorizes the OHCA to verify recipients' income not only through the Oklahoma Tax Commission, which is bad enough, but through the IRS as well. We really don't want that connection established.
No, this bill apparently died in conference committee. I looked up died in committee legislatively, and what that means is either it was defeated, which it wasn't, or it just was not heard. Now, it was on the last day of session, so I think they're just holding it over. So I'm going to look at D as dormant, and this thing could show its ugly head again in 2014. So Senate Bill 254. The numbers to call for the Oklahoma House are 1-800-522-8502, 1-800-522-8502. The Oklahoma Senate is 800-865-6490. That's Oklahoma Senate is 800-865-6490. And Mark, that's the music indicating the end of this hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. Thank you. You are a wealth of knowledge, and we thank you so much for being our guest today. We'll have to have you back again.
Thank you for having me.
May God bless you, and take care.
Thank you. Bye.